Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
What's up, everybody? It is a new week here on the FTN NBA Fantasy Podcast, Fantasy NBA Podcast, whichever you want to call it. Adam Pfeiffer, Joe Metz. As usual, we had a really entertaining day of basketball on Sunday, and Monday's five-game slate is going to be interesting because we already have a ton of news, but we will break it all down here as always. Joe, how was your weekend, and did you enjoy watching Luka dismantle the Milwaukee Bucks?
It was good. You know, this typically I get pretty sour with the Bucks loss, but I mean, we talked about it before the podcast. I had a couple buddies over to watch the game, and we were all just in awe about Luka's play, the way he reads the court, the way he sets teammates up, and his teammates are always in the right spot, too. Like, he's such a joy to watch, where I wasn't even paying attention to the score half the game. I was just paying attention to watching Luka. So I'm excited to see him and Giannis dominate the NBA for the next decade and a half.
Yeah, it's unreal, just the amount of young talent in the NBA. And unfortunately, we'll get to it, but he won't be playing tonight. A lot of guys won't be playing. Like I said, we had a lot of news come up early Sunday night, I should say. A lot of guys still questionable. A lot of guys already ruled out. So this will be a pretty interesting slate. There's going to be plenty of value. And I feel like there's been just an insane amount of value during the bubble in general because teams are being cautious with guys. Guys are obviously already hurt from before the season was suspended, so I don't think it's been a difficulty finding value since the bubble. But before we get started, I want to talk about some of the stuff over at FTN Fantasy, FTNBets.com. We had everything from FTN Daily for free. The tools and everything was free all weekend. So hopefully you took advantage of that, checked out all the stuff available, and it's perfect to kind of get your feet wet and to see what we have, including the incredible tools, the NBA Advanced EVP, which we talk about all the time. It's DVP, but it's more than that. It shows not just positions, but player types. Stefano and the great team, developed this app where it shows how teams do defending. Let's say you want to find a guy like Luka Doncic, who is a guy who has a dimer build, a scorer build, a superstar build. You can see how different teams defend any build you can think of. Stretch bigs, rebounders, rim protectors, 3-and-D guys. It is my favorite thing I've ever seen since I've been in the fantasy industry. Also, the game-by-game NBA articles. Joe and I will be going back and forth on those starting this week. Joe will be, I believe, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm going to be Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, which, I've really enjoyed getting back into that article. And yeah, just all the stuff at FTN, in the FTN network, tennis, League of Legends, UFC, NFL, obviously have a ton of content there. Podcasts, we have a baseball podcast, we have a football podcast, we have this podcast. I would be shocked if somebody, came to Kevin or Jeff or Brad and said, "Hey, I was looking for this on the website and I couldn't find it."
Yeah, it's at a point now where the FTN network is just this big web where you should never have to leave to get what you want. The ADVP tool you mentioned, the exposure tool. Like, these are tools we've never seen in the industry before. The parlay calculator, the odds finder, all these tools that give you not only an edge, against the field, but also an edge between websites, especially when it comes to something like the prop finder, where you can compare odds based on DK Sportsbook, FanDuel Sportsbook, PointsBet, FoxBets, you name it. Like, we do everything we can to give you any type of leg up or edge, and I've never seen a set of tools this dedicated to helping people win, but I've also never seen such a passionate group of content creators, driven to help people win, and I think that's the driving force behind it. So obviously don't mean to get sappy and all long-winded, but I'm really, really proud of the work all of us have done, and I know it's just the beginning. We talked about it last night, but it's scary to think that we're just scraping the tip of the iceberg.
Absolutely. So let's get into it. Final week of the seeding, and then we get the playoffs. So a lot of teams, we're going to have to monitor a lot of team situations in the standings. This is one of those weeks where you have to see who's playing for what. And, you know, it starts on Monday. Five games to late. Let's get to it. Oklahoma City against the Phoenix Suns. The undefeated in the bubble Phoenix Suns. The 5-0 Phoenix Suns. They're really impressive right now. Injury news. We know the Thunder are still without Dennis Schroeder, is away from the team. And then the big men for Oklahoma City, Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, you have to consider them questionable. Adams looked like he was going to play on Sunday, then got scratched. Same with Noel. Mike Muscala started and played big minutes for them. Aaron Baines still out for Phoenix, as well as Kelly Oubre. Let's start with the point guards here. Chris Paul, 8,200. It's annoying that the last two games they have won pretty handily, or they lost to Memphis handily. Last three games they beat the Lakers by a lot. They lost to Memphis by a decent margin, and they just beat Washington today by a good margin. So the first game they were out without Schroeder, we saw in a close game Chris Paul got up to 39 minutes, which he hadn't been doing in the regular season. Mm-hmm. If this game can stay competitive, and right now we're looking at it, it's a 4-point spread in favor of Phoenix. It's a 224 total, so it's pretty juicy for fantasy. If this game stays close, Chris Paul could get to 36, 37 minutes, and it's a pretty good matchup. I mean, we know Phoenix, they are bottom three in points per game allowed off isolation. Actually, they have the most points per game off isolation. Chris Paul is top 15 in points per game in isolation, ninth in frequency rate, so it's a good spot for him. Thoughts on him, because Phoenix is playing really well right now, and Oklahoma City isn't at full strength. This could easily be a spot where Chris Paul could have to play 37 minutes. Again, you look at the standings, though. Is it a spot where they, you know, where they're an immediate need for Chris Paul to play that many minutes?
Yeah, 100%. I think Chris Paul, at his price, you know, he's creeping up to the range where he's probably going to be priced at a ceiling, but I don't think he's there yet, especially given his production without Dennis Schroeder over the last 2 weeks in the bubble. You know, he's producing 1.26 fantasy points a minute. If you average that out over 36 minutes, that's over 45 fantasy points, which alone exceeds that value threshold. His rebounding potential and scoring potential only goes up without Steven Adams on the court. Given the way that Steven Adams' availability and lack thereof played out today, I do expect him to play tomorrow. You know, he was, what'd you say? He was inactive, active.
I think they had him expected out. Then they were like, oh, wait, he's going to play. Then they scratched him. So
yeah, I'm thinking, you know, if
first front end of the back-to-back, I imagine I'd be shocked if one of them didn't play.
He's gonna play. I mean, even without him, I would expect Nerlens Noel to play. I think, like you said, one of the two will play. But I think that only helps Chris Paul in the pick and roll, and also helps counteract DeAndre Ayton. So I don't think Ricky Rubio's he's really improved defensively throughout his career, but he's not anything to write home about, not anyone that's going to stop Chris Paul. Again, 1.26 fantasy points per minute, 40% assist rate, 27% usage rate in the bubble. He's been nothing short of stellar. You obviously know I could go on about Chris Paul just about all day, so I'll pivot to
you. The non top five MVP candidate.
His leadership towards SGA has been
something I get else it. That and hey, at least so with that Billy Donovan thing, got Coach of the Year nominees.
Yeah. Excuse me, he got co-Coach of the Year with Mike Budenholzer. anyways, but he's been great for Shai Gilgeous. I don't think there's been any type of leader in his young career like that so far, except Shai has been really inconsistent in the bubble. He's been shooting pretty inefficiently. I like Chris Paul. What are your thoughts on Shai? Obviously, Dennis Schroeder's out. Does his stock go up? Does it go down with the status of Steven Adams? What is your thoughts on him at $7,000 on DraftKings?
I like him regardless. Okay. I think his floor is there. He had that bad game against Memphis where he just started the game off not hitting anything, and then they fell behind. I like Shai in high-paced games and pace-up spots. Phoenix is a team that will play relatively fast. I think the peripherals will be there. Like, he's not exactly cheap, but I'd rather pay $7K for him than $6,200 for Gallinari, who, again, Gallinari is a guy that will never really – he's always going to give you around that 30 to 33 mark, I feel like, but he's also a guy that I just don't really play when he's at this price unless he's in an incredible matchup, and I choose to play Gallinari in spots where he can really exceed as a spot-up shooter, and Phoenix has actually been above league average against spot-up shooters, so I'd much rather play Shai. And then – My man, Lugans Dort.
That dude, he, what was it? I don't think it was last game.
It was the Memphis game because I had a ton of him and he was like 2%.
He looked great. Unbelievable. I think he was like 4 or 5 from three in the first probably 13 minutes of the game.
He finished 4 or 5 from three. So the only problem is he's a low usage player, but If he's taking advantage of his shots, he's going to have a solid game. Yeah. Now he's up to 4K, and we have a lot of value in this slate, but it's not the worst.
Still high enough where you want to fade? I think 4K is still a fine price for him.
Yeah, let's get this out of the way. Like, he's not somebody you go, do I fade him on this slate? Like, but I understand. Like, yeah, he's 4K. He's a lineup filler and a guy that's going to play 33 minutes in competitive games, maybe even more, because Andre Roberson's not giving them anything. Even though he's back, he wasn't even available on Sunday. Probably precautionary again. But, I mean, even if he's back in lineup, he's going to play, what, 10 minutes max? And then, you know, who had a career high in scoring today? It was Baisley.
Yes.
He had a career high in scoring. But, again, his minutes will probably be down towards 21, 22 if Adams and Noel are back, because he can play some four for them. So for me, it's Chris Paul, it's SGA, maybe some Dort, and then I don't know. Steven Adams at 6,400 is a little scary for me.
I think it is, especially against DeAndre Ayton.
They priced him up because the matchup on paper is really good, but I can't. Maybe last year or 2 years ago, Steven Adams, when it was just him and Russ, but you know, this team has more options now. I won't get to 6,400 for Adams. I will get to some DeAndre Ayton at 8K though. He's been really good.
Yeah,
and he's dominating the rebounds. Aaron Baines is out, so there's nobody that's going to take rebounds from him, really. Oklahoma City, they've not been as good defensively against bigs this year as they were in the past, especially to guys that can really make a difference in the pick and roll. They allow 8.6 points per game to the roll man in pick and roll sets this year, seventh most in the NBA. It's a big part of DeAndre Ayton's game. Like, I still don't love post-up players against Adams, but Ayton does a lot of pick and roll. He's over 4 points per game as the roll man. So 8K, I love his upside. And then, I mean, Devin Booker is just an unbelievable player. 8,700 for him is, you know, not a price where you're like, oh, not playing Devin Booker. He hasn't been great in this matchup this year, but, I mean, he's rolling right now.
Do you think Devin Booker sees any Chris Paul, or do you think it's all SGA? Size difference would be my concern with Chris Paul, but Chris Paul is such a good perimeter defender.
I mean, it's definitely not a great matchup regardless. I would imagine he'll probably... Yeah, because Booker will still play some point when Rubio's out. But like when they're all on the floor together, it'll primarily be SGA, I would imagine. But, you know, Booker's going to go pretty low-owned on this slate, I would imagine, because you have the greatest player in NBA history, TJ Warren, if he plays. You have, you know, LeBron... Like, he'll be higher on now than he would have been 5 hours ago because we got, you know, the Luka stuff. But there's, you know, there's a lot of good plays below him, too, that, you know, if you want to play Booker, I think he'll be lower owned, but he's not, like, a core play for me. I like Ayton a lot. I'm going to have some Ayton. And then you have, you know, Mikal Bridges, who's going to play huge minutes, but he's such a low-usage player that at 4,900, he's not, like, an awful play, but he's never a great play. Like, the problem with Bridges is even when Booker's out, he has no usage, so... It's hard to love him ever when he's in.
The problem with Bridges is the fact that Cam Johnson is kind of taking over that usage.
Yeah.
Instead of him, Cam Johnson's been great in the bubble. Last game was the only game he's seen under 35 minutes. His shot volume's been there. You know, he shot 5 of 6 last game, but before that, 13 shots, 10 shots, 11, 8. Like, he is quickly becoming the third or, I guess, fourth option on offense behind Rubio. And this is a matchup, too, given the individual matchups that Rubio and Devin Booker have with Chris Paul and SGA, where we could see him relied on a little bit more heavily. And at 5,200, I think that's a fine price. So I'd rather pay 5,200 for Cam Johnson than I would 6,200 for Danilo.
I agree, I think. I usually like Danilo, but that's when he's 5,500,
5,600,
and he's a guy, I don't know, I just... Not crazy about him at that price. Anything else from this game?
No, I mean, Ricky Rubio is a player that I typically have interest on almost every slate he's on because he's typically underpriced, but that's not the case here. 6,500 against Chris Paul, mixing some potential SGA coverage. Like, I'm just not that sold on him, especially given how inconsistent he's been. You know, shooting at 41% or under in 3 of the last 4 games, hasn't seen more than 30 minutes since their second game in the bubble. So this is the first slate since the restart that I think I'm actually off of Ricky Rubio.
All right, let's move on to Value Town, Dallas against the Jazz. As I was taking notes, I didn't get to this game yet, so I was thrilled. Luka Doncic, Kristaps Porzingis, Dorian Finney-Smith, all out. They are listed with quote-unquote injuries, but let's be honest, front end of back-to-back, especially after that Milwaukee game. These guys are resting.
Let's address the elephant in the room.
Yeah, there's a certain greatest per-minute player of all time. That's minimum salary.
Most basketball player to ever grace a professional court.
7 foot absolute stud. It's Boban Day. Minimum salary. No Porzingis. Still, obviously, no Willie Cauley-Stein or Dwight Powell, leaving them with Kleber and Porzingis. And that's really it as their quote-unquote, like, bigs. I mean, how popular is Boban going to be? And do you just plug him in and play him?
I think at his price, typically DraftKings is pretty proactive, but because the slate was already published when this news came out, they couldn't. I think because he is, you know, stone cold minimum, he will garner in cash games over 50% ownership. excuse me. My issue with Boban, you know, he can play 15 minutes, rack up 30 fantasy points. We've seen it happen on numerous occasions. And in a matchup like this, you think they would have to counteract the Jazz going big with Rudy Gobert, but there's also the downside where he might only play 10 minutes. He might start and play 8 minutes. Like, it also depends on the rotations the Jazz throw out if they end up going small. So there is a high level of risk here, but the thing is, like, you can't go any cheaper. So I think the reward greatly outweighs the risk here. I don't know if you have anything different.
Well, let's look. So the last time we saw Boban play a really big number of minutes, it was back before the regular season was suspended. It was a game against Denver. Porzingis didn't play. He played 31 minutes, went for 31 and 17. In that same game, they didn't have Willie Cauley-Stein, and they didn't have Dwight Powell either, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Let me double check. Yeah, Powell got hurt in January, so they didn't have any of those guys. And you can make the case that I know Denver has more you know, they're more size in general because Utah uses Royce O'Neal as their four a lot, and you know Denver would have Millsap or Michael Porter Jr. or whoever. But I mean, size wise, it's somewhat similar, especially with the traditional big at the five. I don't think he's gonna play 31 minutes. If he does, he's gonna go crazy. But like if he plays 20. He's probably going to go like 7x,
8x. Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you can't, like, I tried to draw, you know, I tried to extract the on off tool, but there obviously hasn't been when all these players are on the court the last 2 weeks. So you take it for the entire season. You take off Dwight Powell, Porzingis, Willie Cauley-Stein, Finney-Smith, and Luka. And there have been 161 minutes that Boban has been on the court for that. He has a 30% usage rate. He has a 23.7%. rebounding rate, and he produces 1.4 fantasy points per night. Like, those are elite, like downright elite level numbers. Those are Joel Embiid numbers.
Right.
Obviously not drawing a parallel here, but like that's why I think the reward greatly outweighs the risk here. I there is no downside to playing him, especially with his ownership expected to be so high.
What do you think of pivoting to Kleber though? Because Kleber is not Boban, but he's not exactly like a terribly efficient or inefficient player. Yeah. He's going to play more minutes unless Boban just runs it.
My big concern with Kleber is he's been most effective when he's running the pick and roll with Luka. Exactly, we saw that last game as a Bucks.
The pick and roll, pick and pop.
Is he gonna run that with Trey Burke? I don't know.
Trey Burke shoots a ton. He's at 3,700, he's a really good play. Yep. But consider this. I mean, look at his shots the last couple games. 13, 15. That's in 31 and 20 minutes. Like, 13 shots in 20 minutes. Now, no Luka, no Porzingis. He is going to take, at worst, 15 shots in this game. He's 3,700. The Jazz, they're not incredibly great defensively against ball handlers this season. I think Trey Burke, obviously not as exciting as a play as Boban, because Boban's so exciting when he gets the run, but I think Trey Burke is going to have a ton of usage here. You also have DeLon Wright, who should get plenty of run in minutes, and then, of course, Tim Hardaway Jr. with no DFS, no Porzingis, and no Luka. So, who are these Mavericks that, like, you aren't going to play? Because there are obviously a ton of them in play here.
Yeah, I guess the question is, especially against a stout Utah team that ranks top 12 in the league in defensive efficiency, you know, how many Mavs is too many? I think my priority, one and two, go Boban and Trey Burke, like we said. If I was splitting hairs and had to pick ones that I wasn't going to play, I know we talked about the potential of Kleber. I think I would rather opt for the volume of Tim Hardaway Jr. on offense for only, $1,400 more. I'm also still – I have a hard time being sold on Seth Curry, given the fact that he is still working his way back. He's probable for tomorrow, saw 21 minutes last game. But is there going to be a point – is there a need for them to push him 25 to 27 minutes? I don't know. But, then there's the flip side. If he sees those same 21 minutes, his volume's also going to be much higher in this game.
I think he and Don Wright we talked about this. Like, they don't have a lot of guys to play the small forward right now. It's Tim Hardaway Jr. It's Justin Jackson, and then maybe DeLon Wright. If Seth Curry's not playing the three, so
No way. And the thing is, DeLon Wright, he's a player when Luka's out that could typically be bringing the ball off the court too. I guess Trey Burke being here changes that, but he'd be an extremely undersized three.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. I mean, they're going to be run. Boban is the only big. They have and Kleber are going to have to play a lot of minutes. I mean, I would honestly assume Justin Jackson might see 25 minutes.
Yeah, I think just given their personnel right now, he could be the guy at 3,100 that could go a little bit overlooking this team. Not going to have a massive ceiling, but you're going to have plenty of value in this slate. Let's go over to Utah, who Donovan Mitchell's questionable. I don't think this is rest. I think this is legitimate, minor injury. But he did just play 47 minutes. Maybe he was a little sore, but he's got the leg. If he sits, you have Mike Conley right now, who with Bogdanovich and Mitchell off the floor since the bubble, right under a 30% usage rate, a 15% assist rate. We know Ingles is more of a ball handler without Donovan Mitchell on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
His assist rate in general over the course of the season is a team high with Mitchell off the floor. But a lot of that came with Conley missing a lot of time, too. So that's... take that for what it's worth. But Ingles has also been shooting the ball really well from three this year, or since the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you like on Utah?
On Utah, if Donovan Mitchell misses, I actually like Jordan Clarkson a lot for his price. Efficiency has been somewhat of an issue, but that's also never been a staple in Clarkson's career. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a decent amount of run, regardless of whether Mitchell plays, because of the environment of this game, with the fact that Utah could just run away with it. And if you run, obviously, last 2 weeks in the bubble, take it with a grain of salt. If you take Donovan Mitchell off the court, he has a 35% usage rate. That is a lot of it is in part because he is leading the second unit, but he's also producing over a fantasy point per minute. So if he sees 25, 30 minutes, that's over five, 6 seconds.
I don't even think he's seeing usage regardless. Jordan Clarkson has a 32.5% usage rate since the season restarted. That's among qualified players, that is behind Giannis, Zion, Devin Booker, Luka, and Embiid. That's it.
That's insane.
He's got a massive usage rate, and we know Mitchell is a massive usage guy, and they're not always on the floor together, but that'll just help solidify his minutes. That way, if he is inefficient, his minutes can kind of bail you out on that. And, his price is finally going up a little bit, but at 5K, if Mitchell's out, if Mitchell's in, I don't know how much I'll get to him, especially with all his value, but I definitely like him. I like Conley a lot. If he sits, I think Conley's still fine if he doesn't sit. And then, as I mentioned with Ingles, it'll help him as a ball handler. Dallas is 24th against dimers, so either way, whether it's Conley or Ingles, that'll help those guys. Royce O'Neal, kind of, like the Harrison Barnes syndrome, I feel like. He's been just really solid for them, never exciting and never expensive. So if you're looking for – and power forward can often be a rough position in DFS for NBA. It's pretty good tonight because Giannis is obviously power forward eligible. You have Davis, you have TJ Warren, you have Ayton, Michael Porter Jr., Siakam, who's really cheap. So it's pretty good tonight. But, I never really hate Royce O'Neal. Anybody else? I mean, Gobert, it's interesting now.
His price, Gobert, whenever Gobert is in that low to mid 7K range, he catches my eye.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been playing a lot of minutes. Obviously, there was a double overtime game last this last weekend where he played 41 minutes. But before that, he saw 34 minutes against the Lakers, 37 against Memphis. So when there is a big body for him to counter on the court, he's on the court. How much, you know, if Mitchell sits, I think they'd be a little more lax with his minutes and probably scale him back a bit.
Especially after that overtime game.
Correct.
Double overtime, whatever it was.
And the other issue I have with Gobert in that double overtime game, he was destroying Denver in the pick and roll with Donovan Mitchell. He was rolling and just getting to the rim at will, especially in that first half before they adjusted. Does he run that with Mike Conley? I don't know. Does he run that with Jordan Clarkson? Probably not, because Jordan Clarkson is going to shoot. So I like Gobert, but I would probably reserve him for like a larger field tournament. I would probably not go there in cash, given the options on the slate, but I don't hate him.
Yeah, I think they're still going to run it with Conley, maybe he might even get more looks with Conley, who's not going to shoot it as often as Mitchell. But, I mean, on this slate, especially, like, you have, I like Ayton more at similar price. Bam is tough for me. By the way, because Luka, nobody agrees that Luka should win most improved, right? Everybody knew how. No. He's obviously improved, but I mean, Bam is the most improved player in the NBA, in my opinion. Some people will say Brandon Ingram, and I get it, but Bam's that dude. But yeah, I think he'll go overlooked as well, but not really the greatest spot for me. And then I think that's really it for me from Utah. You know, if Mitchell does play, I probably won't get to any of him just because of the guys around him, and there is a concern that they, you know, tail his minutes back a little bit. And I don't know if it'll happen, but Utah's without three of their best four players in this game, or Dallas without three of their best four players. They could get behind in this game, exactly. And if they do get ahead, Utah's going to take this advantage and rest some of these guys. So, all right, let's get to the game of the night. In my opinion, I mean, either one could be, but Toronto at, or not at, I God, I hate that. Toronto against Milwaukee. I know. Toronto against Milwaukee. The only notable injury news here is Giannis with a tooth is probable. It's just a toothache. Actually, I don't want to say just a toothache, because toothaches are a bitch, but I digress. Should be a fun game. I expect a lot of the scoring from this game to come from three. Toronto, a team that gives up a lot of threes only because they're so good everywhere else. Milwaukee is a team that takes a lot of threes. Same thing. You know, they play fast, but they also have great rim protection. So I think the three-point shooters could be interesting here. I really like Fred VanVleet at 7,300. I don't think there should be a $1,300 difference between him and Kyle Lowry, which is why I probably won't play much of Kyle Lowry in this game. And using the advanced DVP tool, Milwaukee 23rd against 3-and-D, the 3-and-D trait. And I think Fred VanVleet fits well in this matchup. Siakam, not as much of a three-point shooter, but I also think he's just a little bit underpriced here.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, the thing with Nick Nurse, we will continue to mention, he runs his starters into the ground. And Fred VanVleet has also been the Bucks' kryptonite. Dating back to the conference finals last year after his, you know, new dad narrative, whatever it may be, he's absolutely destroyed the Bucks. It's been a little different regular season this year because we put a focus, I say we like I'm on the team, the Bucks have put a focus on shutting him down, but he's just too cheap here. For his usage, for his involvement, he's just, like you said, there should be no reason he's $1,300 cheaper than Kyle Lowry when he's been by far and away their most consistent offensive producer. So I absolutely love Lowry. Siakam also feels way too cheap. He seemed to get on track today when he had his 26-point outburst. It's the first time he scored 20 or more points since the second game of the restart. He's really, really struggled from the field up until then. My concern with Siakam is obviously the individual matchup with Giannis. I think it could cause a limit in his offensive ceiling, but I do think there's a ton of potential for him on the defensive end against Giannis. So those are probably my 1A and 1B from Toronto. I don't hate Lowry. I just don't love his price.
Yeah, VanVleet's easily my favorite. He's one of my favorite under-the-radar kind of options on the slate.
I feel like every slate he goes under the radar. I never get the feeling that he's a high-owned popular player. I don't really – I mean, I can see Marcus Gasol getting, you know, 22 to 25 minutes, which he has been. I can see him getting a little more to counteract Brook Lopez. But is that value you need at $4,000? I don't necessarily think so, given the value elsewhere on the slate that we've already mentioned.
Yeah, he had a really good game in their meeting against Milwaukee, but he also played 34 minutes. He won't be getting there in this game, I would imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Serge, you'll see him in probably mid-20s. Besides the big three in Toronto, I don't think there's a ton to love.
Yeah, OG's price is down, but you just don't need him on this slate.
Yeah, St. Norman Powell obviously is not really relevant unless there's an absence in the starting lineup. Same with Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. So I think this is another one of those games that has a lot more appeal as just an NBA fan than it does a DFS player. Obviously, aside from Giannis, I think 10-6 is criminally underpriced.
Yep, that's where I was going to start off with Milwaukee. 10-6 for Giannis just feels wrong. It would have been really interesting if Luka was active today because I would have tried everything to try to play both these guys. It would have been really fun.
10-6 is his lowest price. Oh, okay, no. It's not his lowest price since the restart. It's his lowest price since the first game of the restart since he was 10-5. So, I mean, I think anytime you get Giannis under 11K, I think you pull the trigger.
Yeah, Chris Middleton's somebody I always struggle with when Giannis and the rest of his team are healthy because Middleton's been fantastic in three of the last four games. Assists have been really strong. He's such a good player. It's just he could also go back to, a 35-point outing, and at 7,800, you're not thrilled with that. Brook Lopez has also been really good as of late. He's 5,300. Yeah. Toronto's going to have somewhat of a big out there most of the time. I think Brook Lopez is my second favorite member from this team, but he kind of usually is, just because Middleton's, as much as I like him as an actual NBA player, he's just, he's just always fine when Giannis is active, but not, he's been good the last couple, but probably not a priority for me.
No, his price is not really where it's a little hard with the full lineup. Like if you look at Middleton for 78, I'd rather go Van Vliet shooting guard for less.
Yeah. All right. Anything else in this game? Should be a fun one.
Yeah, not really. Unless the very, very, very off chance Giannis sits, we'll have to scratch literally everything we just said.
Yeah, but the only thing is, the good thing is if Giannis does get scratched, they rest him or whatever, you know what to do. You auto lock Middleton. You get more Bledsoe. You play some Connaughton or DiVincenzo if you want. All right. Maybe this is the game of the night. Indiana versus Miami. If TJ
Warren plays, it will be.
He's gonna play. He's gotta play. TJ Warren is questionable. He was also questionable for Lakers game where he went off. Jimmy Butler is expected to play. Which means we have the game of the restart, man. The best player, Bubble Boy, TJ Warren, best player in the league, against Jimmy Butler, who they had quite the beef earlier on in the season. What, Butler called him soft or something? He said he's not even in my league. Yeah. They were almost about to fight. This is narrative, but both these guys are expecting, to go at each other. So let's talk about Warren because he's been just an incredible story right now. I was looking at some numbers for him. Since the restart, he has a 28.5% usage rate, 1.4 fantasy points per minute, and a 17% rebounding rate. That's a 6% usage bump over the regular season. His rebound rate goes up from 13% to 17%. And because Domantas Sabonis is out, they've been going small a lot more with Warren playing the four. Yep. That's giving him more rebounding opportunities. So his rebound opportunities per game are up by 5 since the restart, which is huge. I think he plays. The question is, the matchup isn't incredible, but I mean, he's just...
But the thing is, look at his game log. Like, he's had a couple of matchups that were incredible.
Lakers, Orlando, slow-paced game, but he just continues to shoot lights out. And I'm telling you, man, I think it's just easier to shoot in the bubble because there's less stuff behind the backboard. I really think that's a thing.
I do too, and I mean every time, especially these last three slates when TJ Warren has seen his price at or above 8K, it's first glance it's unsettling because you're like, why am I about to pay $8,400 for TJ Warren? And then you fade him, and then 3 hours later, you're like, why the hell did I not pay $8,400 for TJ Warren? I don't want to be the one that makes this mistake. I'm not saying I'm auto locking him in, but I will have exposure, especially if a player this hot has any type of mental or emotional fire going into a matchup with Jimmy Butler, that's only going to help him. There is the possibility that Jimmy Butler comes in with the clamps, which he does for a lot of people, but no one is running hotter than TJ Warren. Even FTN's own Javi is not running as hot as TJ Warren. So I definitely recommend giving him a long, long look. Miami, it, like you said, not the easiest matchup in the world, but if he starts at the four, I
Derek Jones.
Derek Jones, Kelly Olynyk, like those are exploitable matchups for someone like TJ Warren.
Yeah, I also think I think he is going to start at the four, which means Derek Jones probably starts at the four on the other end. They went to him in Miami's last game against who'd they play? Phoenix?
Phoenix, yep.
Yeah. So I would expect Derek Jones to probably start the four again. The off chance of Warren sitting, I think you just kind of lock in Oladipo, who played a season high minutes with 35 last game, was good minus the six turnovers. Maybe somebody that they start to limit the minutes of because he's obviously missed so much time. But, I mean, his usage would be great. Malcolm Brogdon's usage would be through the roof. Miles Turner's rebounding rate since the bubble has been massive because Sabonis hasn't been there to take his rebounds. But 6,300, like, I think I would rather play Turner than Steven Adams at a similar price tag.
I do too.
I also don't love the spot for Turner.
I actually don't, like, if we get any type of confirmation, which I doubt we will, that Oladipo should still see a normal workload, he's way too cheap.
Yeah, I would absolutely love Oladipo for sure.
Under 7K. Like, yeah, these guys are reasonably priced.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the off chance Warren's sitting, then you fire him up. Anybody else on this team, though? I mean, Warren, those three guys take up all the usage. Turner's not really a high usage guy, but you know what you're getting from him, and then it's like you don't really play anybody else from this team right now.
No, the only way you really play the Holiday Brothers is if one or both of Brogdon and Oladipo are out, and that obviously doesn't seem to be the case. So I think, you know, TJ Warren number one, shuffle in Brogdon, Oladipo, and Turner based on playing time, I think you'll be fine.
All right, Miami. They're missing some guys too. Goran Dragic, questionable. Kendrick Nunn is quarantining, I believe.
Yep.
So
he just got back to the bubble.
Yeah, he won't be playing. If they're without Dragic and they are going to be without Nunn, looks like Butler's going to play. We saw Tyler Hero get the start at point guard in their last game because they were missing those two guys and Jimmy Butler, and he went off for nearly a triple double. I would imagine, you know, those minutes and that usage won't be there. But there is a case that they're without both their point guards here. Jimmy Butler has a 31.5% usage rate with Dragic and Nunn off the floor. I would have a lot of interest in Butler. I think I do regardless, especially at 7,200. Bam, I think is fine at 7,900. Not a core play for me, but he's always a strong peripherals guy.
I still think Tyler Harris, even with Jimmy Butler back, like he's still only 5,300. He's extremely cheap. There's no way.
Do you think if Dragic sits, they just keep him at point guard? I don't think Jimmy Butler would play point guard. He'll bring the ball up, but I don't think he's actually going to play point guard.
That's what I was just going to say. I think Tyler Herro would be slotted at the point guard, which I'd rather, in this situation, I would rather have Tyler Herro one-on-one against Brogdon over Oladipo. Both are great defenders, but I think Herro's way quicker than Brogdon. Herro's also just an absolute killer. I don't know if I see 36 minutes in him, but 28 to 33, I think he'd be fine at his price. I'm a huge Tyler Herro fan.
Yeah, he's been great.
Pride of Milwaukee.
So Butler hasn't played since August 3rd. As a result of that, we've seen Andre Iguodala finally become part of the rotation more, but his minutes are going significantly down, assuming Butler returns, which puts him out of play for me. I mean, Derek Jones, if he starts at 3,400, he's also not a terrible point-per-minute guy, but, you know, the usage won't be there. But if he can, you know, cut to the basket, get some putbacks, and get some blocks. I mean, at 3,400, he wouldn't be the worst option.
Then you got Jay Crowder, Duncan Robinson, too. That would probably be relevant as well. I mean, do you, Jimmy back, hypothetically say Dragic is out. What do you see Duncan Robinson's role being? I don't think he sees 37 minutes again.
No, he's not seeing that regardless because Butler's playing.
Correct.
I think he's
25 to 29.
Yeah, and you know about him, if he's hitting his threes, then he's going to be really good. And if he's not, then he'll probably give you... I mean, he's been scoring. He scored really at least good. 20 real points in three of their five bubble games. So he has been effective. I think he gets to like 28 to 30 minutes if Butler's back and Dragic plays. Maybe a little bit less if Dragic plays too. What if Dragic plays at under 5K?
I like that price a lot. Even with Jimmy Butler, like the absence of Kendrick Nunn has a ton of volume to lose. At 4,900, he only needs a shade under 25 DK points to return value, which, looking at the restart, the least amount of minutes he's played is 24, recorded 29. 28 minutes at 43.7, 28 minutes again at 31.25. Obviously, that's without Jimmy Butler. But I think Dragic is a well-rounded enough player where he'd be fine. And this is a type of matchup, in my opinion, that caters right to his play style. So I really, really like him. My question, obviously, is he going to play one? And if so, will there be any type of limitations?
Right. By the way, the Pelicans eliminated from playoff contention. You will not be on the podcast with me tomorrow. I'll have Stefano on, which will be dope. But real quick, while we're here, before we get to the last game, what do you think the Pelicans do with their... Does Zion even play the rest of these games for them? They're already limiting him in the first place.
If I am in their decision-making process, I say no. Like, this is not... Like, can you imagine if he tweaks an ankle, like, severely enough, if he blows out a knee doing something stupid in 20 minutes a game for the last, what, two, three games? I would be... There's no way.
We'll talk about that with Stefano tomorrow. Excited to talk about that slate. Let's get to the final game of this slate on Monday. Denver and the Lakers. LeBron, Danny Green, Anthony Davis, all probable. Just keep an eye on it, though. They could sit them. We know the Lakers have had that one seed wrapped up. I believe Dwight Howard's also in the injury report. He's probable. As for Denver, once again, Will Barton, Gary Harris out. Also, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is out for the Lakers. Mm-hmm. That's actually somewhat notable. Let's start with the Lakers. We know they don't. This is their last game of the seeding.
Correct. With KCP, that's why I'm having a really hard time kind of trying to figure out how much these guys will play.
It's Monday, and their playoff game is a week from tomorrow, I believe.
Like, there's two possibilities. Do you give AD and LeBron 35 to 37 minutes around, just let them have a field day and rest for a week? Just because
you have the week, right.
Just because you have the week. Or because you have the week, do you take the extra conservative approach and scale them back to avoid, you know, like we just talked about Zion for a second, to avoid any irresponsible and negligent injuries?
I honestly think it's somewhere in between. I think they could play 33 to 35. So that Indiana game was close. LeBron played 35 minutes. I would project LeBron, if this game, and I would expect this game to be close too. Like, if it's another close game, I think LeBron plays 35. I think Davis plays. If anybody's going to play a little bit more, I would say it'd be Davis. But I'm talking maybe max 37, which obviously at under 10K, it doesn't matter. If he plays 34 minutes, 33 minutes, he should be good. But yeah, that is something to consider with the Lakers, especially because KCP's already a little bit banged up. They're already missing Rondo and Bradley as it is. They can't afford to lose anybody else. I'm surprised Danny Green's probable. I assumed he would sit just because he didn't play on Saturday with a sore hip, and you know they need his 3-and-D presence on defense for the playoffs. I was surprised he's probable, which would have made me really interested in some of these cheaper wings because they're already without KCP. I think what I'm going to be doing is, like, everybody's going to go to Giannis over LeBron, right?
Yeah, and I think that's reasonable. I personally, just because of the ambiguity around these two guys, I'll probably avoid them altogether.
I think I'm more willing to play Davis at least than you are, just because his usage has been so high in the bubble.
I think if I had to choose between the two, I'd go Davis over LeBron.
Sure. Any of these, like if these guys do see limited minutes, who would benefit? Because KCPL, maybe Caruso gets run. Waiters playing time was
a big one.
Waiters playing time the last couple games is boosted for games where LeBron was out. But yeah, Kuzma, he would be a huge one, and he's been pretty cheap since the restart.
Yeah, agreed, 100%. And he's also an individual that contributes on both ends of the court. We looked at Danny Green. Do you think I assume he'll be back.
Yeah, he's probable. I was surprised to see him probable.
Saturday. But this is another player that they might, like, if they're scaling back on minutes with LeBron and AD, I wouldn't be surprised if they also do it with someone like Danny Green, given his age and the recent injury history. So that could open up even more minutes for Caruso and Waiters. So I absolutely love both of them. I really, really like Kyle Kuzma. He's looked really aggressive in the bubble, albeit rather inefficient for the most part. But if he see, I mean, he'll see 25 minutes regardless of what Anthony Davis and LeBron play. But if they're scaled back, he'll see that usage jump up. I do like him a lot. But I frankly, I have more interest in the Denver side of the ball in this game.
Yeah. And by the way, Portland, I was looking at the Portland scores when Dame went for another monster game. He went for 51. Oh,
he's so good.
He's just the man. He is. I don't want to say it. I really don't. But like,
just say. I think I know.
Mentality wise, he's got some MJ in him, dude.
I was gonna say Kobe.
Well, that too. Yeah, Kobe for sure.
He really does.
He's the man. But Denver is 21st against opposing benches too, so that bodes well for Kuzma. Denver though, I mean, look, I will always admit when I'm wrong. I was more interested in fading Michael Porter Jr. last time we did this podcast. He has been, if it wasn't for TJ Warren, we'd probably be talking about Michael Porter Jr. more right now because he's arrived.
Yeah, when we, I'm excited to do our all bubble all NBA team, even though we're probably not going to do that podcast. But
we could. Michael Porter Jr. would be the four.
Michael Porter Jr. would be the four.
Warren There's would be not, the three.
Like, this is a situation much like Michael Porter Jr. You look at it and you're like, man, am I really going to pay $7,700 for him? And then you fast forward 3 hours and you're going to be pissed if you don't. Like, his game log is insane. His efficiency, like, he only shot 39% last game, but he's making up for it and he's crashing the boards. He's contributing defensively at the rim. Like, he's playing really, really well. He's also, to my surprise, especially given his history, he's playing a ton of minutes. Like, Mike Malone has just let him go and do whatever he wants.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess how do you not after seeing how productive he is? Like, but the return of Jamal Murray did not affect him whatsoever.
I always use this example when really, really extremely talented guys come on the scene. Their price keeps going up, but their production does as well. Odell Beckham from his rookie year when he was healthy. It was like you kept fading him, you kept losing money, and I'm scared of that with Michael Porter Jr. right now. Jokic, 9,100.
So cheap. That Love is him. So cheap.
I know the matchup is tough, but it doesn't matter with Jokic because he's a point forward. He leads the NBA in touches per game since the restart. And Jamal Murray being there is so much so beneficial for him because they run that dribble handoff more than any team in the NBA. And it's, you know, not rocket science to believe that Jamal Murray is more of a threat in that role than Monty Morris. So 100%. I just think that it helps the assist rate. The usage comes down a little bit, but Jokic is touching the ball more than anybody anyway. It doesn't really matter. And he's 9,100.
Jamal Murray on the court, he's still got that 30% usage rate. So, I mean, over the last 2 weeks, so obviously the last game. So I think he's still way too cheap. I mean, speaking of Jamal Murray, I did not expect him to play even double overtime, 39 minutes in his first game back since March. But he looked awesome.
Yeah, and I was looking at numbers. I remember Utah being dead last against the dribble handoff, and they are. And we saw Jamal Murray go off. The Lakers much better against that, but they're also, you know, they're just, there's something that needs to be said about how hard the Lakers are going to try this game.
Yep. Like, could we see, I don't think we'll see a situation like we did with Doc and the Clippers where they were literally trying to give Portland a win. But I think this is a situation where we see a strategic approach to potentially scale back and rest some players without declaring that you are resting players.
Right.
When it comes to Jamal Murray individually, though, like, the Lakers have been really, really good against point guards of his archetype. They're seventh against dimers, eighth against primary ball handlers, first against scorers. I do think because of the presence of Jokic that the scorer aspect of that ADVP can be taken with a bit of a grain of salt because I expect them to put more pressure on Jokic, which could free up Murray a little bit. And I think the absence of KCP helps him a lot. So, I mean, he was two assists shy of a triple-double last game. So I think Mike Malone will play him. 7,100, I'm fine biting that
price. And you can play them together. They correlate really well.
They correlate really well.
I love them. They're my favorite correlation in NBA DFS. I love them.
So would you – I mean, the three guys we talked about – we're obviously really high on all three of MPJ, Jokic, and Murray. How would you rank them?
I would still personally, and this might be me being an idiot, rank them Jokic, Murray, MPJ.
See, I think I would go MPJ, Jokic, Murray.
Yeah, and I think I'm alone on that. I really do. But let's not forget, Michael Porter Jr., if he didn't have the injury concerns coming out, was an incredible prospect. Just
yeah.
Massive. That was the year the Cavs took Sexton. I was like, oh, they're going to take Michael Porter Jr. here. They're going to try to get like the next face of their franchise, and they didn't. I was kind of mad. But anybody else on this team? Like, Torrey Craig's going to play big minutes right now with Harrison Barton out. He's, you know, kind of like the same as like Dort, essentially. He's like the same player. And then you have Jeremy Grant, who I love. I love this Denver team, dude. I hope Denver wins the title.
I hope they do too. I don't think this is the year, but I think, health permitting, I think they have.
Did you see what Josh Gross tweeted earlier last week? Something about Giannis Giannis signing with Denver.
Here we go.
Because Denver's going to have cap.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be rumors about Giannis signing with everyone over the next, you know, 12 months. But Jeremy Grant is a player that is criminally underpriced just about every slate because he isn't a high usage player. Even with the team healthy, he still sees minutes, and he's efficient enough in those minutes to pay off. I mean, he's only 4,800. This is a player where if I have 5K left in the utility spot and I don't know who to play, I'll just default to Jeremy Grant. I'll feel okay about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love Jeremy Grant. Hashtag Syracuse. Anything else from this Monday slate that features a ton of injuries, a lot of Dallas value? But, you know, when I like slates like this where they appear to be chalky, because in tournaments you can really get different and make some strides. I think my guy in this slate, other than the obvious ones, is definitely going to be Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, I like that call a lot. Looking at, I mean, oh my God, I want my guy this late to be TJ Warren. I still feel like I don't know if I can hitch my wagon to that. I don't know. But yeah,
I hope him and Butler go back and forth, like all-star game type waiters, Tim Hardaway Jr., like those kind of battles. That'd be
like,
so fun.
Yeah. Or like, Devin Booker and Tyler Herro just went last game.
Or is there a fight 15 minutes in and both get ejected and everybody loses money?
If you see Dana White at the game somehow, then you know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
but no, this is a really, really, really good slate, especially for tournaments. Like you said, the leverage, a lot of that ownership. I'll be updating my exposures throughout the day in the exposure tool on FTN, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you also have the game-by-game article. So check that out. You get that up really early in the morning. So I usually have 2:30 locks, but it'll be
up around 7, 8 a.m.
Yeah. And then, check out Eddie Fear's live stream. I think it's mid-afternoon. He always does that. And they
usually 2 hours, you hour and a half, 2 hours before.
Yeah. And they not only talk about the slate ahead, but they preview the night before or recap the night before. And it's great stuff. And then Kyle Murray's projections and everything, Saber Sim, everybody, just literally everybody, Stefano, all the guys, NBA content's been great. And Stefano, speaking of him, he will be joining me on Tuesday's podcast for Tuesday's slate, so look forward to that as well. But appreciate everybody listening as always. Best of luck on this slate. Have a good one. We'll see you on Tuesday. Later.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.